Choo choo, choo choo, choo choo. The podcasting machine returns.
Oh yeah.
Sorry, I've got nothing.
So who wants to kick off?
I'll kick off. My name is Jackson Matthews.
My name's Rick Timmis.
And they call me John Wordsworth.
And today we're going to be talking about a subject that needs precious little introduction if you've ever used the internet. It's the Soper Piper legislation. Is it Piper or Pipper? How do you say it?
I've always said Pipper, but I don't know if that's correct.
Pipper sounds more friendly, whereas Piper sounds a bit more vicious, doesn't it?
I think I like the idea of Piper because it's only got a single consonant between the two vowels, hasn't it? So it should be Piper.
Yeah, I think Pipper humanises it. Makes me think of that dog that used to be on the telly.
And we mustn't leave out Actor. Also, Actor has been sort of like left out a little bit, left behind, ignored. But this is the sneaky little underdog that came in round the back door.
Yes.
Yes,
exactly.
So everybody.
As far as my knowledge goes of the subject, is that this legislation was because recently it's been shelved for now, which we all know it always means for now. I'm sure it'll be back with another four letters. And the thing with it is that it's aimed at curbing online piracy and misuse of intellectual property. It's all that kind of age-old struggle, isn't it? And the basic gist of it is, it will give the government power to close down any website accused of copyright infringement, whether this is the case or not. But the point of it is, the reason why everybody got so upset is because this was going to give them far too wide a range of power, and it was far too broad in its definition, and it was wide open to misuse. So they could basically shut down any site where, like, they felt like, basically, if they could find anything in there that fell within this very loosely defined idea of breaching copyright. Like somebody, I mean, in theory, going by the wording of the thing, if somebody used an avatar, a Skeletor avatar, then that would be reason enough. Hey, you've used that image without permission.
Mm-hmm.
We can shut down your entire site. I mean, we probably wouldn't, but we can, is the point. I mean, they're not going to, because they'd have to shut down the entire internet, wouldn't they? But the point is, they can target any one website at any one time. Say, we don't like that one. Yep, there's our excuse. Click. They can turn it off. You know.
I guess it's a bit like saying the government has to have a set of keys to every house in the country.
Yes.
We won't use them.
Yes.
But we have to have them.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
That wouldn't sit well.
Yeah.
I think you summarised that really well, and the this is the change. I think this is this transition point that was always going to come about. And it's probably been rumoured around for a little while. I mean, the internet was kind of fairly unregulated for a long period of time, and there weren't that many people using it, and people have got on, and more data and more information. But now, once it's become commercialised, now it's like a commercial route to market, and it's a route for governments and so on and so forth. The moment that happens, all of a sudden, large corporates and large governments start to want to control it.
Mm-hmm,
and they give us all, they create all these illusions like, we want to introduce SOPA because the RIA said its material's getting copied and this, that and the other. But the net result is that all of that, as far as I'm concerned, is complete guise. It's about control.
Yep.
And it's about getting control of the internet, which is largely a free-for-all at the moment. And governments don't like that, large corporations don't like that, because they can't manipulate the market to suit their own needs. And so these vehicles, SOPA, PIPA, and of course ACTA, as far as I'm concerned, are all about just seizing that control. And of course they'll dress them up of one bullshit reason or another as to why it needs to be done in, and it's for your own good.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, it's just a way to compromise what is an open medium to the people and to take control over it.
Yeah.
And once they've got that control, you can bet your bottom dollar they'll start censoring everything, they'll start shutting people down, they'll start disconnecting stuff from the net, and it'll be a very different animal altogether.
Not that
I'd take a radical position on it by any stretch.
Yeah. It's a very hard sell, isn't it, when to the people. You can't really say, yeah, we're taking away this website that you visit and this website that you use for your own good. You know what I mean? It's like, that doesn't do anything for me as a user if, like, that website, even websites I don't use, if they're if the Pirate Bay shut down tomorrow, this wouldn't affect me in the slightest. It's like, okay, Warner Brothers would have a few more bucks in its back pocket, but how does that... That doesn't help me. Or maybe we'll make better films and we'll continue to produce. Like, but they seem to be managing fine on that score without... Even with this kind of thing going on, there's no benefit to me. So it's a very hard sell to the people to tell them, oh yeah, we need to take away this website, just for your own good. Because to be honest, everybody's like downloading this stuff, aren't they?
Mm-hmm.
I mean this. I mean online piracy. I mean small scale online piracy is just so rife. They can't really get the cork back in the bottle. There's no way. So like they're trying to like come at it from the angle that you're saying. But having said that, it's not really about stopping online piracy, is it?
I don't think so.
Because they still can't do that, because a lot of these take somewhere like the Pirate Bay. I mean they still can't touch the Pirate Bay, and correct me if I'm wrong, because their servers are in another country. Is that right?
Yeah. So I mean, I guess the situation historically has been the Pirate Bay in Sweden, where they have different laws and therefore no one can touch the servers.
Yeah.
And they're apparently pretty well hidden anyway, so you have to do a lot of work to find out where the real servers are.
Yeah.
And the backup servers and the backup servers.
Yeah.
But I guess from a SOAP perspective, the theory is what they would do is they'd just shut off the DNS routing for all of America to Pirate Bay.
Yeah.
So anyone in America trying to visit somewhere like the Pirate Bay would just be hit with a... and I actually tweeted a fake message that someone built, and I thought this is hilarious. It's just kind of, you know, it was just a typical American sign basically saying, "We have blocked this website from you for your own protection."
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that's pretty much the view of half the web that you would end up seeing if SOAP got passed, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It's, it makes me laugh. I went back to one of my favourite websites and mentioned it before, Encyclopedia Dramatica, to see what their take on it was, and they referred to SOAP as Actor 2 Electric Boogaloo. and it came with it came complete with the instruction how to get around a DNS block and stuff like that. But it does make me sad to think of like a site like that just being like completely scrubbed, because it would get scrubbed in a New York minute, a site like that, because it's got loads and loads of pictures with no regards to copyright. They'll just like bring pictures from here, there and everywhere, but nobody's making money off of this kind of thing. But it is the kind of site that would be have its head cut off.
Yeah, no, I think that it's the thin end of the wedge. This is the problem with all of this. And I mean, let's just look for a moment at this idea of the justification for piracy. Okay, so about 15 years ago, I had a mate of mine, whose name will remain anonymous, but he gave me a list. And I didn't even have a computer at the time, because I was doing some other things. And he gave me this list of all the latest films that were available in the cinema that I could get on DVD. And they were £1 each. And they came in a little case with a printed cover on them. And what he was doing, or what this network that he was involved in were doing, was somebody was getting a copy and then copying the DVDs and making copies of them. And basically, you, like Avon, I'd like this one. And then they'd say to his mate, right, make 10 of them, 10 of these, 10 of that. And then you'd buy them all for £1 or whatever it was, or £2 or whatever. It might have been a little bit more than that, but it was massively cheap. And there was this massive pirate network going on of these guys who were all acting as independent agents, taking orders on this sheet of paper and then delivering the CDs and collecting the money. And there was a whole industry surrounding it, and it never went anywhere near the internet. When I was a kid, I was about 15, and I got to watch E.T. It was brilliant to see E.T. And my brother brought it round on a video.
Right.
When it had only just been released in the cinema. Yeah. It had only just been released in the cinema. My brother comes around with a Betamax video, sticks it in the video machine and says, "Here we go, check it out, here's E.T." And so we watched E.T., phoned home and all that. So the internet is the cause of piracy. Rubbish.
Yeah.
Absolute rubbish. It doesn't work. So that it's not going to stop. And if you stop it on the internet, it'll go back to that model. Or that's whatever it will, because people like a deal.
Yeah.
Now, don't get me wrong, I could buy these music albums and this, that and the other, Or I could buy, you know, I could have bought Lord of the Rings, for example, as a free DVD. I've actually got the box set with all the bits and pieces in it. Why? Because the commercial manufacturers added some value.
Yes.
That's how you secure the market, by adding value, by taking your profits and using them sensibly to create a value and to create a sense of a value in the product that you don't get with the pirated product that makes it stand out.
Yeah.
And I'm not talking about sticking something that says, "You wouldn't steal a policeman's helmet. You wouldn't steal a baby. Copyright theft is theft. Contact fact." That's not what I'm talking about, because I don't mean to point out the obvious, but when I get pirated, if you get a pirated stuff, if you got a pirated DVD and looked at it, well, they don't put that stuff on the front anyway, do they? They cut it off.
That's right.
Take it out.
That's right.
So that's not going to work. So
I also love how they assume that you wouldn't steal a car. That's quite an assumption.
Well,
I always thought that was...
You sound very sure of yourself.
It's a quick anecdote, but I thought that was a funny thing you just said, where you don't get that on the pirated one. With Windows XP, when they released it, they put all this rubbish into XP Home, where if you changed three bits of hardware, it would know, and then it would lock it out until you rang up Microsoft to confirm it wasn't a different PC. But that wasn't in the Pro one. And which one do you think people are going to pirate? The rubbish home version or the Pro one?
Yeah.
It was ridiculous. But, sorry, that is an anecdote. No,
but it demonstrates exactly the same thing. So if us learned gentlemen, right, can debunk such theory so quickly, do you not think the strategists in government and the people that are thinking up these policies can't also debunk them? Of course they can.
Mm.
The guys that are sitting around the table designing the white paper, you're not telling me there isn't somebody who's got at least half a brain in there and says, well, actually, Gov, they'll probably just do this, and there'll be blokes running around like Avon ticking it off. And they go, oh, well, that policy's not going to work. So these guys that are writing this, they know that.
Mm.
So if they know that it isn't going to work, then what's your only other motivation for putting it in place? It's because you can't stand the idea of not having control, that the people have got a sense of freedom about the internet to go and see and do what they like, and they simply don't like it.
Yeah.
And that's the net result. And so, yeah, SOPA and PIPA, they got quashed and put on a back burner, and Congress didn't support it. But whilst all of that was happening, President Obama signed ACTA. And ACTA is even, in my opinion, is worse, because SOPA and PIPA were both legislation that affected the US. So it was a localised bit of legislation. But ACTA has been drummed up as a directive out of the European Union and supported by the US, and it's a multilateral treaty on the globe. So the government's done it again.
Mm.
They've come out and gone, we're going to put SOPA and PIPA in place. And the people have gone, oh my God, look, oh, mainstream media tells us this. Everybody, let's protest that. And while you're protesting that, they go, tsk.
Yeah.
Have you seen ACTA? Come on, Barrack, we're going to sign this. That'll fuck them. And that's exactly what happened.
Yeah.
And so now the great thing about that mechanism is that they can now prosecute and bring legal cases against the ISPs if people are downloading material, and shut the ISPs down and have all of that sort of stuff. That's like me going and roading the Royal Bank of Scotland in a Ford and the managing director of Ford getting arrested for selling a car.
That's exactly it.
Well, I think you should also take a bit of a hit for the people who put the roads in place.
Well, I agree. Absolutely. Yeah.
Without a road, how can I rob a bank? You know.
Yeah, but as Ministry of Transport, they're all hands off. Wasn't me good.
Yeah, it's very typical. It's like when everybody's having fun and you're making it more difficult for people. I mean, all the people that are using it lawfully aren't doing anything wrong. It's going to be harder and harder for them to do the things that they enjoy, basically. Whereas Mr. Expert, he's going to know how to get around this block or that block or mirror site or anything like that. The criminal will always find a way. But there's not as many... I really don't believe there are as many criminals as there are, like, genuine internet users, and all you're doing is really you're really just hurting them. I mean, you are really killing the goose that lays the golden eggs. If you want to make it harder for people to use the internet and buy crap from you, because if the more difficult it becomes, the less attractive the internet is, the less time they're spending on it, then you're going to rod for your own back, really, I think. Whereas, as you say, you should be looking more at making a better deal for them. How do I get you on board? I'll give you an incentive, but that's...
And let's start, yeah? This is I've thought this is crazy since day one. They've basically gone, right, digital age. We're going to embrace the digital age by selling all of the same stuff we normally sell on DVD to you through the internet. And you go, oh, cool. Don't need to pirate it now. I can just buy it online, like Steam. You can buy games. iTunes, you can buy a movie. They charge more for the download where they've had to do no work and they haven't got to pay any money for a DVD. They've got to hire a server that costs, you know, a fraction of the cost of an episode a month. And you think, why... Oh, it just frustrates me every time I go to Steam and I go, oh, I'm going to buy Rage. That look, you know, it looks all right. I don't want to pay full price for it, but I'll wait till it's a bit cheaper. 30 quid forever. Get on Amazon for a tenner.
Yeah.
Obviously, if I'm at home, not that I would do this. I haven't, you know, haven't done this for years and years, actually, because I've now got enough money to not have to pirate things. But 8 years ago, I probably would have just gone, I'd pirate it. But if it was a tenner on Steam, I would have bought it.
It's the ease of access, isn't it?
I just want it now. Well, I don't want to wait 4 days for it to arrive from Amazon. Yeah. So the privilege of getting it now, the privilege of not having someone having to put the CD in a post, have it shipped to me, have someone in China burn it on disc, have someone print the manual, have someone print the case, put it all together and ship it around the world twice. I have to pay more for someone not to do that.
Yeah.
All they're doing is having a file on the server and giving me a copy, which costs nothing, essentially, when they've got the infrastructure in place. You know?
And yet they're doing all right with it. I mean, downloads are, like, tremendously popular, so I guess people were prepared to keep paying big prices just for that convenience of having it piped down to their computer.
Well, it becomes just as inconvenient to pirate something, doesn't it? I mean, like, you gave that example of 30 quid on Steam, £10 on Rage, or £2.50 from Dennis the Menace. Whichever way you go. But in actual fact, the simplest and most convenient way is probably the download, because that's instant. But it's the price point that puts you off. Well, now the problem, now if you take that away for a minute and start thinking about, if you utilised that vehicle correctly and got the price point right, people wouldn't pirate. Because why would you bother pirate? It's so convenient to just go, click, I got it. I'm not even had to think about it. So it's just like, I'll take it.
When you pirate, you might get a virus and it won't work properly and you've got all these other rubbish problems. Whereas if the Steam copy costs a tenner, I would just have bought it, you know? They need a bit more competition, I think. The market it's big, but it's not spread out, you know, there isn't much competition for Steam, so there's no point in them lowering the price.
I mean, are we missing, perhaps, I was thinking to myself, well, this is all well and good. I was thinking about the disparity, if you like, between the marketeer and a geek or a technologist. So geeks like us, for example, we don't tend to struggle really to get our heads into the mind of the marketeer. And this was demonstrated. I think a good example of this is we did a show last week or the week before about the Kinect. And we were looking at these videos where they were playing a violin and this thing. Now the techies and the geeks know that you can't play an air violin on a Kinect. It just doesn't happen. But the marketeers, somebody in a marketing room who's completely clueless about technology, I'm making some fairly loose assumptions here, of course. But the marketeers that have come up with that have come up with all of these notional ideas that in actual fact are somewhat unfeasible, without realising what the real potential is of the product from a technical point of view. I wonder if we've got the same problem in corporate enterprises, which is there just simply isn't enough geek input or enough techie input into the marketing department to say, well, actually, if you just drop the price point right on this and make it a one-click wonder, the people that are in that technology market space will just go, that is the path of least resistance. The reason why people are using technology like this is because it's the path of least resistance. It makes their life simpler. So that's how you can add the value, and you can add the value for nothing. And like the iPhone does, go on the App Store. I always buy something. Yeah. Go on there, click, oh, I'll have that. Or my daughter wants a book, click, I'll have that. Or, well, I'll have that one, well, and then and that one, and that one. I don't even think about the price because I don't have to get any cash out. I don't even have to get my credit card out. And a receipt gets emailed to me. So I'm click, 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 buy, buy, buy.
Yeah.
And I suspect, I mean, there's obviously a facility to pirate iPad games somehow, I'm assuming. I'm assuming if you jailbreak it and do all this gumph, you can probably pirate them somehow. But I don't know anyone that's ever bothered doing that because it's so easy not to.
Yeah.
You know, like, whereas on other devices, even on the DS, I knew a couple of people that bought this little card so you could copy games and stuff. And that is like on the Nintendo DS 3 or 4 years ago. But that's because the game costs 30 quid. But on the App Store, they the most expensive thing I've bought is £6. And even that isn't exactly a stretch. And these things are, some of the games you got on the iPhone are almost the sort of quality of the old Nintendo DS games, which they're still selling for £30. And you pay £3 for it, and I just dropped £3. I just like, just buy it. The thought of spending an hour to try and get a hacked version, it's just like, why would I ever do that? £3. Bye.
The point is that a hacker was never going to buy it, was he?
No.
He just wanted to do it, to hack it, to pirate it, for the sake of it. But he was if there was no way of him doing so, he wouldn't bother buying the game. He's too cheap for that. is the point. He wouldn't buy it in itself unless he could pirate it. But otherwise, he wasn't interested. So this war on piracy is kind of it's not only a war you won't win. It's not really a war worth waging.
No, it's not. And I think we've given some examples there. John just talked about the Apple model. And to support that further still, Apple product price points are very high. If you can afford an iPad, you're not going to worry about £3 to £6 for whatever app you want to buy, because you just paid £500 for the device. Mm-hmm. Same as if you buy a Mac, for example. You buy a Mac, it's got Lion on it. You go to the App Store and you can buy an Office program for £20. You just paid £2,000 for your Mac Pro, £20 for the Office product. I'll have it. You're not going to worry about that. Now, then, Apple, of course, are appealing to that slightly more affluent market, and then they're not capitalising on that and making it easy for the consumer to spend more money. In a traditional sales environment, this is just called an upsell, and that's the model that they're missing.
Do you not find it weird that all the Apple equivalents to Microsoft things are actually a lot cheaper? Say, like, the Apple's Office suite is only £45.
Mm.
The Apple upgrade to Lion, when they brought out Lion, was only £23, whereas to upgrade Windows it costs £70.
No, and because it's only £23,
everyone I know pretty much who's got an Apple has done it. Whereas I've never seen people upgrade their Windows machine. They just say, "Oh, I'll just wait till the next one comes out."
Yeah,
and that's an example. It's like, because they sold it for £25, everyone just did it.
Well, we're talking about piracy and this, that, and the other. I mean, obviously, I've spent a lot of time, plenty of years, doing commercial implementations, working as sysadmin on various sites, and this, that, and the other. And it's very simple. Take most Apple owners now. If you've got an Apple and you've got the latest thing on it and you've got Pages or an Office product or whatever it is, I almost guarantee you a pound to a penny that software will be legit, it'll be paid for, it'll have a license, a correct license, and so on and so forth. I guarantee you that we could walk into any company in this city and we would be able to find illegal copyrighted software. One of the most commonly copied products out there is Microsoft Office, because people are not going to pay £400 for it. People aren't even going to pay £180 for the student edition. I'm not going to pay for the £180 for the crippled edition when I can just copy the discs and load it onto my PC. And go and look at any PC and try and audit the software. Most of it hasn't got licenses. Half the time, the machines haven't even got a license for the operating system.
However, when they released the ultimate student office copy, this was a student promotion across the UK for university students, and it was £35 for the ultimate edition of Office.
Mm-hmm.
That sold quite well.
Right.
I know lots of people have bought that. It's the first time I ever convinced people to buy Office instead of just acquiring it.
Yeah.
Because it's £35 and you click the button and download it.
Yeah.
And I suspect that you probably sold it to more students than whoever bought your £180 one.
Yeah. And so that demonstrates the model, because at the higher price point, the motivation is to copy the software. Now, to be fair to Microsoft, I don't think that Microsoft was too concerned, particularly where Office products were being copied. They might publicly say
they have to.
But the net result is that they were using proprietary formats for their Office document interchange, which forced everybody else onto it. And so wherever they wanted to enforce their licensing, go to a big company with 10,000 seats,
yeah,
we're a bit skint. Have you got licenses? No, you haven't. You better get them. You've got no choice. So as a route to market, that was quite useful.
I guess I suspect some other big players have a similar approach as well, like Photoshop and Adobe with Photoshop, and modelling companies with their 3D modelling software. I suspect the fact that loads of students have dodgy copies of Photoshop on their machines, they don't care. The only people they care about are people making money out of it.
They're the
ones that are going to chase down, and equally with the sort of 3D modelling software, which costs what used to cost upwards of £10,000. It's more a bit more modest now. It's about 4,000, but that's too much. But they want students to use it so that when they go into work, that's what they're going to want to get, isn't it? They just don't want the companies to not pay for it. So.
That's right, yeah. This is the reason they don't swoop in on every... Because if you thought to yourself, like if, as you said, like you walk into any company you liked, if they knew that, which they're obviously like, they're obviously aware of that like possibility, they would just be swooping in on all the business. If you knew there were drugs in every one of these buildings, actually, they'd probably still leave them alone, wouldn't they? But yeah, it's not in their interests to do that, so which is why they don't.
So the bringing this back to the legislation and the legislators.
Yeah, it's ironic there. We said it wasn't about piracy, and then we talked about piracy, didn't we?
Yeah.
But you have to talk a bit about piracy.
Yeah, I think you do, and I think we've demonstrated really clearly that piracy is going on all over the place, and you can change internet laws as much as you like and introduce this kind of legislation, and it simply isn't going to stop. Now, this is a tech show, so let's just investigate some of the tech that sidelines this for a moment. I mean, SOPA and PIPA, they're talking about shutting down DNS so that effectively you can't go and resolve those things in Sweden. We just run your own DNS service, don't you? And those guys that run Ubuntu or this, then if you just post all the URLs straight into your etc. hosts file, or if you're on Windows, locally into your LM hosts file, and all of a sudden, bang, you go straight on through. So what they're going to do now, they're going to have to start locking down the IP traffic to those IP addresses. Well, that's much more complicated thing to do. Well, if they do that, how do you get around it? Well, you just start using the Tor networks, which basically packet wrap the IPs. So the Tor networks allow you to wrap an onion wrapper of external packets around the core packet, and it bounces around several servers. So you bounce it around those servers in the US till it goes out into a European or an Asian server, unwrap that packet, send it into Sweden, pull the stuff in from Pirate Bay, rewrap it up, send it back in again. So this legislation does nothing.
Yeah.
And they've obviously consulted with nobody with any technical skill, because if somebody of my level knows how to do it, you can bet your bottom dollar that the people that matter, the black hats that want to do things for a commercial interest, they'll write software to do it.
And that is exactly the problem that you raised, Jack, isn't it? Is that the only people that will be negatively affected by that will be the average Joe. And granted, you know, it might stop him from pirating the one film a year, you know, but it might also stop him from downloading five more that he was going to buy, because he might have got a pirated version, found it as crap, and then bought it.
Yeah.
But that whole thing won't happen. But the person who's downloading every film and burning it to DVD and still selling it on the street corner, he's still going to be able to do it. Isn't going to stop him at all, you know?
Not in the slightest, because, I mean, you've just said there's like a million different ways you can seem to get around whatever they can do. I mean, we're short of chopping down phone lines. There's no real way you can get that genie back in the bottle, is there?
And in fact, it's probably even worse. You know, the guys who you're never going to prosecute, the person at home who downloads one movie every 6 months off BitTorrent, who you're just not going to chase down to court, which might represent 50% of the population, they won't be able to do it anymore. They're not going to spend any more money on it. They're just missing out on one movie a month. And like I say, they might even buy fewer movies because they're not trialing them.
Yeah.
They're not in that mindset of, oh, I don't want to watch a movie anymore, because they just get out of it and do something else, like play tennis or something.
Yeah.
But the guy who's selling, who's actually going to make financial gain out of the act of piracy, he's going to have to find more cunning ways of doing it, which means it's going to be harder for you to catch him.
Yeah.
Because he's going to go, oh, I can't use the DNS record anymore. I need to learn more about the tech so I can get around that. And in doing so, he's anonymizing his web traffic and making it even harder for the US government to find that guy who's making millions of pounds out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And they're the guys you need to go after.
Yeah, that's right. They got themselves all tied up. I wonder if, like, everybody didn't react like a little bit prematurely, because I gather like any one of these senators can like wake up with some like ridiculous idea he had a dream about and then try and get like a bill passed, and then you just got like talk to a few of your friends, will you do this? Oh yeah sure. And by the time it all makes it up to like the big board or whatever, you're looking and think, Jesus, that's pretty freaking dumb. And then it kind of like dies to death because nobody's really thought it through. They just had this like rattle in the saber, you know what I mean? I guess what I'm saying is, was it really as imminent doom as we thought it was? Or was this just like a few stupid men trying to get a broken plane off the blocks?
I personally think that it is imminent doom, and I still think it's imminent doom. And I think the reasons for that are to do with the structures. And as you were saying that, then I was reminded of the show we did 3 weeks ago, which was the Serious Business show, where we were talking about war and we're talking about conspiracy theories and so on and so forth. Now, if you think about the congressmen, so in SOPRA, for example, the congressmen, which are high-profile, public-facing people, these people that are in these positions of power, they're not geeks. They probably hardly ever touch a computer very often because they'll have secretaries that do that for them, and they spend most of the time in briefing meetings where they've probably got a PA that sits with them and takes all the notes and this and the other. They are massively removed from technology. Maybe they've got a mobile phone and they probably use it just as a phone. I mean, I work alongside a guy who's got an iPhone and the only thing he can do on it is make telephone calls, and that's about it. He might be able to get his email open, but he really struggles with it, and apps and all of that kind of stuff. He's completely lost. And he works really hard to try to understand the technology and to get his head around it. But the net result is that's just not his bag, because he's not that type of person. But
I know the main proponent has a Twitter account. I know as much as that, but it's probably not much beyond that. You know what I mean? Like, he's dipped his toe in and suddenly he thinks he's an expert. You know,
it's probably being run for him.
By his PA.
That's right, run
by his PA.
That's true, actually, yeah.
So first of all, he has very limited knowledge. Now, then we've got this army. So I'm unwrapping this kind of conspiratorial thing here, but this is where I really truly believe it's coming from. Then we've got this army of lobbyists, professional lobbyists, and these people, they know how to schmooze, they've got really good people skills, they know how to interact, and they've got a network of people that are connected very closely to these Congress people and so on and so forth. And these lobbyists are paid by the corporations to go and put a position forward. And it's those guys that get paid by the RIA and the film companies, this, that, and the other, that go and persuade the congressman. That they give such a persuasive argument that this is the right thing to do. And the congressman, of course, buys into all of that. Mm. It's only when the congressman is getting all of this stuff coming back over Twitter and all of these techies going, no, mate, this is wrong, that at some point he thinks, well, hang on a minute. Yeah, he's told me that, but now I've seen this, and he gets more information. So the people that make the powers, make the decisions, are influenced and are influenceable by something that sits slightly a couple of steps abstracted that we don't see, which is the large corporates, the large this, that, and the other, that send in the lobbyists to influence. Mm. And so we've seen SOPA, we've seen PIPA, we've seen ACTA go through and happen, and you're going to see more of this, and it will go through and it will get put into power because the commercial players will manipulate the system to ensure that it does. Now, from a techie point of view, the question asks then is, what happens to the community and to the hive mind that's emerging? It's only kind of organically emerging at the moment, but with the social networks, there's this hive mind emerging with the internet. What happens to us as a people when they shut that down? When all of a sudden the free information that's available on Google to allow you to find this, that, and the other is locked down, when all of a sudden it's gone way beyond all of that and the internet is being shut down and being closed down and they're controlling the information flow, what happens then? Because that's where it's going to go.
That would be the end for them, though, wouldn't it? Because what would happen is someone would make their own 3G network, which is not patrolled by the government. You know, and then everyone would buy that, and it all start again because the government would be like, ha ha ha, the internet is now under our full control, and then some random Joe would develop a 3G chip on a ball which cost £4 and make another internet, and that's exactly what would happen. And within 5 to 10 years, everyone would be on that, and the government would be like, oh, shit,
yeah. Right.
We actually have no control over this now because they've thought about it in a way that we can't have control over it.
Yeah,
so we're running Antarctica or something. Why a group of guys who now live there?
Yeah,
outside of our jurisdiction.
Have you come across packet radio? Have you heard of packet radio? So, well, packet radio was originally developed by the ham radio network, amateur radio networks. And if there are any radio hams out there, I'm about 22 years since the last time I did this. So when I get these wrong, okay, write to us and let us know and tell us what it is. But I believe that packet radio was set up and it was running over the 2 meter wavelength. And it was data packets that were being transmitted from repeater to repeater to repeater across the radio waves. Now, it was fairly low board, but you were able to communicate and send text documents and textual information to one another and message one another, and they would, and the ham radios got right into it, and basically you could leave like emails. Now, that was when me and my mate Steve Norbury were working on the Datel sound sampler stuff together. It was his dad who showed me packet radio, and I would have been 14 at the time, so we're talking about 30 years ago. So before the internet was even invented, this communications mechanism in the ham radio network already existed, and it was worldwide. You could transmit data anywhere in the world at low board, and that's precisely what I think would happen with probably the 3G networks, perhaps piping data into the ham radios or into the radio network and back onto the network. Obviously, the core data network is run by the big telcos at the moment, and so your data capacity would be massively reduced. But people are ingenious with mesh networks and stuff like that, and I think that that's what would happen to keep that information flow going. And it'd become even more geekdom and more kind of exclusively the rights of the techies, but it'd become even more darkly powerful. So it's almost as though like the legislators would be creating their own undoing by doing what they're doing.
That's right, you drive them deeper underground is what happens with, well, I don't like to compare like internet users to terrorists, but it's the same kind of thing. If you like make it harder for them, they'll just go deeper, won't they? It's funny hearing you guys talk about like the next version of the internet, like an alternative internet. Well, it reminds me, I was thinking earlier about like what you were saying about what would happen if the internet did get locked down, and like where would we all be? And I was reminded of a publication that my dad told me about when he was growing up in London called the International Times.
Mm-hmm.
And this was basically like an underground publication that was distributed all kinds of like music events and things like that, anywhere they thought they could get this out to people. And it was very anti-establishment, this thing, and had all sorts of like articles written by like I think Jermaine Greer and John Peel. Big name figures. I mean, Paul McCartney donated it to it at one point. But this thing was very anti-establishment, and it had all sorts of like information to help you like duck the man and stuff. There were like emergency numbers you could call if you got like arrested by the police and things like that, like the right people to talk to. And the police tried several times to get this thing shut down. And on one occasion, they raided their offices a couple of times. And in response, another underground publication called Black Dwarf raided the police headquarters, and in the next edition they put in like all sorts of like diagrams and illustrations of like the layout of the place, and pictures of like door handles and the way like locks were arranged. And he was saying, "Oh yeah, I was looking through documents, and having drunk some of the commissioner's whiskey."
I tell you what, sorry, another anecdote, but from what you just said, it reminded me of a recent news story I read on the BBC, where there was an anti-hacker discussion which was held between certain, like a couple of FBI maybe and police constables in the UK. But it was a, you know, international UK, US and possibly a couple of other countries talking about how to deal with Anonymous, the hacking group.
And
the next day the transcript from that call was on the internet.
No way. Oh wow, exactly. I mean, this was a closed meeting.
Because one of the Anonymous guys has got an email and found out about the, well, this is all speculation as to how they got it, but they think it was because, you know, someone got one of the emails about how to get into the conference call or something, and and then they set up something to record it.
That's almost a bit spooky, isn't it?
Well, they do say, don't they? We are legion. Expect us.
That's it. That is it.
I just thought that was hilarious. It's like having a special call to deal with these pesky hackers. Oh yeah, really?
Thanks for that.
It's funny, I think Anonymous is really cool. I was thinking of joining.
Changing your name.
I couldn't figure out where you sign up.
That's it. Where do you go? Just keep your ear to the ground and wait for them to call you. You know what I mean?
But this International Times, so this was a paper. I mean, what kind of time frame were we talking about that this was in publication?
Well, this started in the 60s.
Right.
I mean, if you'll bear with me, like quoting, I can get up some more precise facts on the old Wikipedia. But If I just bring this up, I hope you don't mind.
I'd like a date and time, please, for the first meeting, if that's okay.
14th of October, 1966.
Wow, right, okay.
And this thing has been going on and off for like years now, and it's actually, all of the issues of it are available online. If you go, you can get a link from the Wikipedia page, where it's all been archived. And it got raided several times, as I say. And then eventually, it first ceased publication in 1972, according to good old Wikipedia, after being convicted for running contact ads for gay men. See, these days, obviously, that wouldn't be a problem. But right. You can see they were looking for any excuse at all just to shut them down, you know what I mean? And of course, that wouldn't fly these days. It says it was revived in 1975, continuing until 82, and it resurfaced in 86 and into the 1990s. And in 2011, it was relaunched for the web. But it's funny, the parallels, because like you move to like talk about like Anonymous and stuff, but this is how those people communicated and disseminated information in a world where you couldn't use the internet.
Mm.
And when I think about like your alternative internet, how would you'd want a good number of people using this? I mean, not just techies, but you'd want like the more casual people to use it as well, like people who wanted to go there, like you wanted to come into your club and like start giving it a bit of numbers. But how would you make those people aware of such things? And I think like a publication like this would be a great way to make them aware of something like that without like having to reach them through your totalitarian internet, which you'd have by that point. But if you imagine passing out a few of these to like students and stuff,
mm-hmm.
that would like catch on like brush fire, wouldn't it? But it's funny how like this is how I see like the internet before the internet, or possibly even after the internet, if the worst does come to pass.
I mean, I these kinds of movements and things they fascinate me, and they fascinate me, I think, because of the power that they have. I mean, I went to a 2600 meeting here in Exeter once. There was only a few guys there, but and I didn't know at the time what 2600 was. But I mean, and I'm not entirely sure how active it is now, but that was like a really quite an interesting experience, sitting there with a bunch of hacker guys and the information that was being swapped and exchanged. And of course, these things again, like, you know, I think it was a mate of mine who was a sysadmin, and he was like, oh, have a look at this, and it was on a leaflet, 2600 meetings. Oh yeah, cool, I'll come along to that. And that kind of stuff. And like the Anonymous, I mean, I was in Exeter the other day, and the Occupy movement were out, protesting about, and quite right too, Vodafone should pay their £6 billion tax bill. It's outrageous. So God bless Occupy. But there were a couple of guys there in the old Guy Fawkes masks, and I was just thinking, like, you look so awesome, just in this Anonymous mask, like, and you see them in their suits and this thing with them, and you just think, you look really cool, like, you know, that's like, and it's just like, it's sticking it to the man in a major way, isn't it, you know?
I mean, that thing about, like, the transcript of the conversation, that's just the best thing I've ever done. That's just so good.
Yeah, that is awesome. That is awesome.
I wouldn't be surprised if it was up on ED, because they're all Anonymous guys at ED. It's all like, that's their baby. So you can the biggest clue is when you look up Anonymous on ED, and it's the longest, most detailed, most flattering article you've ever read. And you think they're on the wrong site, yeah.
That's brilliant.
Well, I think at the end of the day, this kind of legislation, it simply isn't going to go away. And I think that it's important that anybody who's involved in the internet keeps an eye on this, keep an eye on the social networks, and make sure that you can raise your voice about it. Because if you don't, the legislation will come in, like we saw with SOPA and PIPA. You know, that got pushed to one side, but ACTA got signed. And ACTA, I would wager, was potentially a more threatening piece of legislation because it was global. So we have to be actively trying to protect that. Because otherwise, we're going to end up having to build our own networks to interconnect, and they probably might not be as functional and as media-rich as we have got with the internet. However, they will be free.
Yeah, that's right. And one day, they'll get a lot bigger. I mean, that sort of thing catches on pretty quick. I mean, people will probably be still uploading stuff from the last internet.
Well, I've been saving my Pringles cans and a few wireless network cards so I can make up some, you know, Wi-Fi beam antennas to beam data around, and And you know, so I'm up on the hill. So from where you are, Johnny, we get a Pringles can on the top of your building here on a pole, and from my building, we can have a Wi-Fi net running there. Oh, we'll soon have a mesh network set up around the city in no time.
You think about it, though. I mean, if you could somehow, I mean, I wonder if it's already possible to turn your Wi-Fi router with a firmware upgrade into something which could run a Wi-Fi network connecting to other routers.
Yeah.
And I would be, you'd be hard pressed to find a corner of Exeter where there isn't another Wi-Fi router within your range.
Yeah.
You know? And everyone in Exeter could have their own network today, couldn't they?
Well, it depends.
You'd have to get everyone to have the firmware. But.
Yeah, it depends a little bit on the hardware that's in there. But in the Linux community, there's something called WRT,
yeah,
which is a package that you could do that with and set up mesh networks and all the rest of it and do that kind of stuff. So you can connect all of that together. The difficulty I see this is endpoints. It's the interconnect endpoints that where you need to get, like for example, here in Exeter, you could set up a mesh network to transmit data and you could probably get all the way across the whole of the city using the model that you're talking about. But how do you get, once you reach outside of that where you've got distance of gaps of no Wi-Fi radiated, how do you get beyond that? Well, maybe you could use acoustic couplers or phones or something like that to hook into the next town or next city. So it'd be a little bit more complicated there. But then, and then it's how do you get it around into the States and into the other places? Yeah. But you know, those things are, again, you know, maybe things like, well, it'd have to be RF, I think, it'd be the answer there. You'd have to use, you know, low frequency RF or whatever to get the distance. But you wouldn't get the same data range. But at the end of the day, it'd be doable. And people would come up with clever buffering mechanisms that prioritise packets and buffer them, and so you'd send off your data, request a download or something, and then it'd ping you back and say, we've got your data, here it is. When, you know, maybe the data would, you want to get something across from the States, so it might take a week or 10 days for that data to slowly stream across to a point where it's in your city, and then from a node, I mean, BitTorrent, and a few modifications to BitTorrent, and you could be away with this kind of thing, couldn't you?
Absolutely.
So, you know, it's all completely doable, and all you have to do is, all the government has to do is just legislate just enough to take guys like us to get ticked off. I'll go Google, not again, I'm blocked again. Oh, fuck it, right. Get me the WRT thing.
Yeah.
Load that on my router and I'm in, you know, count me in.
Yeah.
Where's my Guy Fawkes face mask?
brilliant. So I think that, well, for me, I think I've got out everything I wanted to say about Super.
And I feel better knowing that we've got a backup plan if all YouTube does get shut to shit. I was a little bit worried part way through, I've got to say. Like, I was thinking to myself, yeah, where's it going to end? It's all going to be taken away. But now I feel better now. We'll be all right. We'll be all right. You heard it here first.
Let us know what you think. If you know how to build a alternate internet, then send us some instructions or get in touch. So email us show@atrandom.org. My name's Rick Timmis. I'll catch you on the mesh side.
My name is John Wordsworth, and he doesn't mean Windows Mesh.
I'm Jackson Matthews, reminding you that they will never stop the signal.